Nobody's doing anything because Shane was a drug addict. Everybody goes back to that. That was a comment that Mike Hewitt made on a Facebook post about his missing son, Shane Workman. Not only does Mike have to deal with the constant pain of having a missing son, but he does this while believing that no one cares. Mike is not alone. Many family members of missing people who don't fit the mold of the perfect victim experience the exact same thing. But Shane and all missing people deserve to be found. On April 25th, 2010, at around 10 p.m., 31-year-old Shane Workman told his dad he was going to run to Sheetz, a gas station near their home in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. But Shane never made it there. Mike and his partner, Cindy Workman, didn't realize anything was wrong and went on a camping trip the next morning. It wouldn't be until they returned that they realized their son had never come home after his quick trip to the gas station. A search party was formed immediately, but despite many tips, including the names of people who may have been involved in Shane's disappearance, Mike says that Lewistown police quickly lost interest. After 7 years, Shane is still missing, but his family is still fighting for Shane and for justice. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell you the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Shane Workman. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. I'm Kona.
And I'm Ethan.
And we're the husband and wife team behind this podcast. Each week, I tell you the story of an unsolved missing persons case. Ethan doesn't know anything about the case going into the episode, and he's here to provide his reactions and questions in real time, hopefully asking some of the same ones you have at home. This case was suggested to us by Voices for Vanished, a nonprofit organization that provides search and recovery services to families of missing persons and to law enforcement. They've been helping out with Shane's case and asked if we could feature it on our show.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. So, of course, I said yes. But as you probably gathered from the intro, there isn't a ton of media coverage out there.
It doesn't sound like it.
No. But Shane is very clearly loved and missed, so I absolutely want to help get his story out there. Before we get started, though, we've had a new member join us over on Patreon, so we want to give a shout-out to Serena W. Thank you so much for your support.
Thank you so much.
Remember, if you join us there on any level, starting at just $2 a month, you can get these episodes ad-free, and you also get a free copy of the ebook that I wrote. So with that out of the way, let's get into the story of Shane Workman. Shane Allen Workman was born on December 19th, 1985, to Mike Hewitt and Cindy Workman. Though it doesn't seem as though the pair ever married, they've been together since 1982. Shane grew up in Lewistown, Pennsylvania, a small borough in Mifflin County, located along the Juniata River, about 60 miles northwest of Harrisburg.
That's close to State College.
Yeah. So State College actually does come up a couple times in this episode. So I kind of gathered that. It seems like that was a place that a lot of people would go.
And for those that don't know, State College is where Penn State is, where I went to college.
Yeah. It was clear early on that Shane wasn't going to live a super conventional life. When he was around 17, Shane and his girlfriend, Alicia, became parents. Though the couple didn't stay together, Alicia calls Shane her first love, and he was deeply devoted to their daughter, Alexis. As the years went on, Shane started getting involved with drugs. He also had several run-ins with the law, including harassment, aggravated assault, and a DUI. But in 2017, when this is all happening, Shane was 31 and was trying to turn over a new leaf. He was out of jail, and he had a good job. But his father, Mike, did say that Shane still dabbled in drugs, and that was how he put it.
Okay.
There's only been one real news story that I could find that covered anything but the basics of when he was last seen. It was done by Fox 43. In this interview, Shane's parents recalled the last night that they saw him. So Shane was single at this point, and he was known as a bit of a ladies' man and apparently frequently had women. So he was living with his parents, and, you know, he would have like women kind of coming in and out a lot. And on the night of April 25th, 2017, he was with a woman who has been identified as Kelly P. Now, he and I don't know if they were dating or anything like that, but, you know, they were just hanging out that night. So he and Kelly were over at his parents' house where, like I said, Shane was living. They spent time upstairs in Shane's room before leaving the house. But Shane returned a short time later and told his dad that someone had been following them down the alley. He didn't seem too freaked out about this, though. And a few minutes later, he told Mike that he was running to Sheetz to get something to eat and asked him if he wanted anything. Mike said no, and Shane walked out the door. He never returned.
So what's the distance between this Sheetz
and their house?
Their house?
Like a block and a half.
So he walked.
Yeah. So he had, like I mentioned, a DUI. And I think his license was suspended at the time.
Okay.
So I don't think he was driving in general, but it was like a block and a half away. So he probably wouldn't have driven regardless.
And you mentioned an alley.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming he lived in downtown Lewiston?
I guess.
Yeah, I mean, if there's an alley, one would assume it's in town.
Right, right.
I mean, they do. I'm assuming Lewiston is not a very large town.
It's not. It's very small. And like I said, it's a borough. It's, you know, it has like 6,000 people.
I mean, I've probably been there. I just don't remember specifically going there.
You know, I mean, again, he's not in a bustling city or anything like that,
right.
But he's not out in the woods either. Like, he lives a block and a half from his Sheetz.
Right, yeah, and that's more of where I was going. Yeah. It's like, you know, what was in between, how far away, was it wooded area, that sort of thing.
Right, no, nothing like that. I mean, yeah, nothing where he could have, like, wandered off and gotten lost or
anything fallen
like
in
that.
A river or something
right,
like that.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, he would have really had to, like, try.
Yeah. Now, how do we know that he didn't actually ever make it to Sheetz?
Oh, well, I'm going to get to that.
Okay.
So Shane was 31, like I mentioned, and so his parents weren't waiting up for him or anything like that. And it was already 10:30 when he went to Sheetz. So I'm guessing that, like, they just went to bed, you know?
And at some point, the woman he was with left, or had she already left?
She had already left.
Okay.
So I think when he came back alone.
Okay.
And then that's when he told his dad he was going to run to Sheetz. So Kelly, you know, she was already out of the picture, apparently, you know? So yeah, so like I said, I'm sure Shane's parents were getting ready to go to bed, and they weren't going to, like, wait up for him or whatever. And so they just didn't realize that he didn't come home.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So the next morning, Shane's parents either thought that, you know, he was in his room sleeping, or they expected him to be home shortly because he had a dog that he took care of.
Right. But either way, he wasn't going on the camping trip.
No. Yeah. So that was, like, never the plan.
Yeah.
They were leaving on their camping trip. I'm assuming they left relatively early.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So I think they weren't necessarily expecting to see him that morning.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah. But even if Shane had stayed out the night before, like, they knew he was going to come back to take care of his dog. So, like, it didn't matter to them at the time.
Right. I mean, he's an adult.
Yeah.
Just because he's living with his parents doesn't mean that he's, like, a child that needs to come home at a certain hour or
exactly.
Whatever.
Yeah. He definitely didn't have a curfew.
Yeah.
So Mike and Cindy had this camping trip planned. So they left on the morning of Wednesday, April 26th, with no idea that anything was wrong. They didn't find out that anything was amiss until Sunday afternoon when they received a call from their neighbor. The neighbor said that they hadn't seen Shane's dog outside at all, which was weird.
And this is, so they got a call on Sunday. So this is 5 days later.
Yeah.
Wow.
So the neighbor knew that Mike and Cindy were gone, but they knew that Shane, you know, I guess wasn't going with them. So they had expected to see Shane, see the dog, you know, whatever. And they just hadn't seen anything. So fortunately, the neighbor had a key, and so the neighbor was able to get into the house and, I assume, take care of the dog.
Yeah, I hope that dog was okay.
I mean, it seems like nobody mentioned anything, so we're just going to assume that the dog was doing great.
Okay.
Shane's parents tried to call their son, but received no response. They left messages, but they went unanswered. At that point, they started calling around to Shane's friends. They ended up reaching one of his ex-girlfriends who went to the home. So she ended up going up to Shane's room and was confronted with a completely normal scene. Nothing was amiss or seemed to be missing. Shane's house keys were on his bed. He didn't take them because his parents were home,
right?
You know, and he's expecting to come back. So his house keys were there, but, you know, it also didn't look like anyone had been there in a while.
Mm.
Mike and Cindy returned the next day, Monday, May 1st. The ex-girlfriend who was there, you know, checking on everything, didn't move anything. So Mike says that when he went up to Shane's room, quote, his house key was laying in the center of his bed. Bed wasn't slept in or nothing, end quote. Lewistown Police is a small agency, but at first it seems as though they were helpful. The Shane Workman Search Party Facebook group was formed 2 days later on May 3rd, and on May 4th, Mike posted that Lewistown Police were coordinating with the fire department to get boats to check the Juniata River. Unfortunately, they had recently had a lot of rain, so ultimately the water was too high and they couldn't get the boats in. They continued to monitor the situation, and in the meantime, Shane's friends and family got to work distributing flyers and organizing search parties of their own. Police were eventually able to review the security footage from the sheets.
Okay.
Yeah. Where Shane was supposed to go on the night of the 25th, but he never appeared in any of the footage. There were initial reports that Shane had spoken to somebody by phone the next day on the 26th. But that was later determined to have been a mistake. The person actually spoke to Shane on the morning of the 25th prior to his disappearance.
Okay.
On May 10th, police and fire departments were finally able to take out boats and search the river. They did a sweep from the boat launch off of River Access Road to the fishing access point at the Juniata County line and back, but no trace of Shane was found. As the weeks went on without word from Shane, people, of course, began to develop theories and the rumor mill started churning. So remember how I said earlier that Shane was still dabbling in drugs?
Yeah.
Unsurprisingly, it started to look as though his disappearance could have been somehow drug related. Did you know that your actual age might not be the same as your biological age? That's right. It's not just about your birth date. Your body could be older or younger than you think. Hey everyone, it's Kona, host of And Then They Were Gone, and I am coming to you today to talk about True Diagnostic. With their True Age test, you can discover your true biological age, plus get insights into things like your risk for heart disease, Alzheimer's, and even early mortality. And the best part? It's all done from the comfort of your own home. No prescriptions, no lab visits, just a simple test sent straight to your door. True Age is actually sending me a test, and I'm really excited to see what it's going to say about my health. And frankly, a little frightened. Because even though I'm afraid it's going to tell me that my biological age is higher than my normal age, it's definitely information that I can use. Because by tracking my biological age, I can actually see how changes that I make, whether exercise, diet, or sleep, can affect my health over time. And this isn't guesswork. The True Age test is based on peer-reviewed research from scientists working with Harvard, Duke, and Yale. I don't know. I like to know everything, so I think it's going to be really cool to know exactly how my lifestyle is impacting my body. I already know there's definitely room for improvement, and I think this is going to give me some actionable steps. So if you're ready to join me and find out your biological age, right now, my listeners can get 20% off their entire order at truediagnostic.com by using the code ATTWG at checkout. That's True Diagnostic, TRUDIAGNOSTIC.com. Just use the code ATTWG to save 20%. Plus, if you subscribe, you'll get an additional 20% off the 50% discount. Discover your true age today. On May 12th, about 3 weeks after Shane was last seen, his father posted in the Facebook group that the police told him that they had information that someone took Shane to Harrisburg and took off without him.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming the police have his cell phone records at this point?
I think so. What I do know is that the it was a prepaid cell phone.
Oh.
So I don't know how that
affects, works either.
Yeah. So I don't know what they were and weren't able to get.
Yeah, I can't speak on that. I don't have any training in cell phone forensics or anything like that. So
yeah, so I'm not sure how useful that was, if at all.
Yeah.
Mike hears from the police that they received a tip that, you know, these people took Shane to Harrisburg and left him there, basically. So, you know, the police didn't name any names, so Mike couldn't follow up on his own other than going to Harrisburg and taking to the streets there. Now, this theory that Shane was like picked up by some people and, you know, kind of left in Harrisburg seemed to kind of be backed up by a friend who said that she had heard that Shane owed a lot of money to the wrong people.
Assuming in Harrisburg?
Yeah, or, you know, people who had business there.
Okay.
Mike also had someone come out with a bloodhound to track Shane's scent. So Mike did this himself. Like, he literally just, like, found somebody who had a bloodhound.
Do you think that's because of lack of resources from Lewistown PD? Or do you think that, I mean, I have to imagine at a certain point, Lewiston PD would contact the state police.
Oh, we'll get into all that later. Okay. At a certain point they did.
Okay.
But yeah, initially, I think they were kind of helping. Like I said, they did coordinate to do the search of the river.
Right.
But this wasn't something that they were putting a ton of resources into. And it is a small department as well. So you're right. I mean, they don't have a ton of resources to put into it.
Right.
But it just wasn't their top priority either. Yeah, so Mike found this guy with the bloodhound, and the bloodhound was apparently able to track Shane's scent. And the dog tracked him about a block and a half from his house, so I think near the sheets, but not quite there, before he lost the scent, indicating that Shane probably got into a car.
Right.
You know, this is all from like the Facebook group that Mike started. So as many people were pointing out in the comments, if someone had just like left Shane in Harrisburg, certainly he would have been able to have made it to a phone by then.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because I mean, this is like 2 weeks after his disappearance at this point.
Yeah. And even if, I mean, even if it was a burner phone, he still had a cell phone.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even, but if they took it, like, you know what I mean? Like, even if they left him with like literally nothing,
right?
Like, he could have figured something out in 2 weeks, you know?
Yeah.
But if that story was true, the only reason why he couldn't have is if he physically couldn't.
Right.
Many people did speculate, though, that the reason he hadn't gotten in touch is because he was hiding out from these people that he owed money to.
Mm.
But as the weeks turned into months, that scenario seemed less and less likely. By late June, Mike said that the Lewistown police had stopped contacting him. So this is about 2 months into Shane's disappearance. As the summer progressed, several different rumors popped up about Shane being safe. Some said that he was safe and sound, but in hiding. Someone else said that he had contacted his dad, but none of those rumors turned out to be true at all. By August, no actual trace of Shane had been found, and Mike seemed to switch from thinking he was out there, possibly hiding, to he was out there and no longer alive. On August 16th, he posted in part, quote, "It's going to be fall before long, and the leaves will fall and cover him up. We all need to get up the side of that mountain and find him," end quote.
So it sounds like Mike is thinking that there's a targeted area where Shane might be found?
Yeah, because he was getting all of these people telling him all sorts of crazy stuff.
Okay.
He was getting tips and people like wouldn't give their names. They, you know, wouldn't call him back. They'd like block their number. Like, I mean, wild things. And this seemed to be happening a lot. And so in mid-October, Mike got a tip that seemed like it would finally lead him to Shane. On October 16th, Mike Hewitt posted that he received an anonymous tip regarding his son's location. He put out a call asking for people with boots and chainsaws to go to an area with shallow water and clear it out. It sounded as though he believed Shane was in a body of water with trees around and like fallen wood on top of him, basically.
Okay.
Many of the comments urged Mike not to go in immediately and wait for the police to come check it out with the proper equipment. He agreed, but said that the police weren't really getting back to him anymore, which, I mean, had already become a problem. Thankfully, however, they seemed to take this tip seriously and came the next day to take a report. They also said that they were turning Shane's case over to the state police.
There we go.
Which made Mike and the rest of Shane's family hopeful that there'd be more movement in the investigation. But, and this is weird to me. It's really difficult because I'm piecing this all together through Facebook because the news was not covering this.
Yeah.
So there were no news articles that I could go to for like clear information
or confirmation on anything.
Right.
Yeah.
And so what it sounds like, though, is the police, you know, they came out and took the report on this tip, you know, of like Shane's location, but they didn't search themselves.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So they took the report and said, we're turning this over to the state police.
Yeah.
We're like, washing our hands of it. Yeah.
Yeah. But they did assist Mike and volunteers in getting like the proper permission to do the search themselves.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Because it was like, I guess, in like a public waterway or, you know, and it was, I know it was near a bridge. And so like there are issues there. And so whatever it is, they helped them get the permission to go down there and basically start like chopping trees down and things like that.
It just seems weird that they would go to that extent of helping him to get the permission, but not helping him on the search.
I know.
And like, it's not, it sounds like he already organized all of the equipment that they would need. So like, why wouldn't you just send a couple of cops up there with them?
I don't know, but it doesn't sound like they did. So Mike and, you know, a few volunteers spent about a week clearing out logs and other debris. And I mean, they went back like day after day. And, you know, and that's why it doesn't sound like the cops were helping them, because Mike was like, okay, like I need somebody who has a chainsaw. Like I need somebody who has this, that, and the other. Let's meet in the Walmart parking lot and go down there. So after days of backbreaking work, they found no sign of Shane. After that disappointment, Mike continued to receive tips about his son, but none panned out. He later told Fox 43 that he was happy with the state police's work on the case, but that in January 2018, Lewistown asked for the case back.
That's strange.
Yeah.
Why?
I have no idea. And I don't think Mike knew either. And they didn't take it back to do anything with it, because after that, it seems as though any forward progress just stopped.
That's really strange to me. I mean, you know, you would think that if this was somehow linked to another case, that would make sense of them asking for the case back.
Oh.
If Shane was somehow involved in some other case, or he was related somehow.
Oh,
that
yeah.
would make sense if they asked for the case back. But it just seems odd to me that they would just randomly ask for it back.
Just to do nothing.
Yes.
Yeah.
For it to go nowhere.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I mean, it could have been something like that. But again, I have no idea. And Mike didn't know. By the 1 year anniversary, morale was pretty low. Mike felt as though police didn't care about his son and that he was alone in this horrible situation. The news wasn't picking the story up, and Shane's family just couldn't get traction anywhere. Years began to pass. Mike and others passed names and tips onto the police with no idea if anything was followed up on. According to Mike, police didn't even canvass the neighborhood in the days after Shane's disappearance to see if any neighbors had seen anything.
They didn't even do like the basics of like
walking around? They went to the sheets. They got the footage, which I mean footage, is definitely key. Like that's a very important thing that they did do. But yeah, apparently they didn't canvass.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's wild. That's just like, that's basic policing 101. Like, I don't understand why they wouldn't,
but
at the very least, do that.
We've run into this before. I mean, we did, what, a 3-part episode on Ralph Jean Marie in Vermont, in Barrie, Vermont, and police, same thing. He was involved with drugs. He went missing from a low-budget motel.
Yeah.
And police didn't canvass the area. They didn't pull any of the surveillance footage from any of the businesses nearby. I guess that just happens in these cases sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, like, I can kind of see the whole, like, okay, we're a small department, this guy's an adult, he'll come back on his own mentality.
Right, which they definitely had.
Sure, except for the fact that he had already been missing for 5 days before they even picked up the case.
Right.
That it's not like it was the same day or a couple of hours.
Yeah.
Where it's like, meh, he'll come back. It's 5 days that he's missing already.
Yeah.
From the start.
And he left his house key. He left his dog. Like, right. He, you know, left all of his belongings.
And like, they had to go to the sheets to physically get the footage from the cameras. So why didn't they just walk the block and a half in between the houses and
knock on a few doors?
Yes.
Yeah. No, I know.
Wild.
So when Shane disappeared, his Facebook account went dormant, obviously. No one else had any access to it, so they couldn't go in and see if there are any messages that could potentially yield any clues. Then, in January 2019, everyone on Shane's friends list was shocked when a video was posted to his page.
Oh.
Now, this video wasn't of Shane or anything like that. Like, I think it was just a random internet video. I was never able to see the actual video. I only saw a screenshot of it.
Okay.
While some wondered if it was Shane's way of saying that he was out there and alive, others wondered if someone who was involved in his disappearance had been able to access his account.
So it was posted under Shane? It's not like somebody tagged him in
No, it was, posted on his account.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's creepy.
Right. It scared the shit out of everyone, you know? A Facebook user purporting to be a police officer involved with Shane's case got on the Shane Workman search party group and basically said that there wasn't anything that the police could do about it. And I say purporting to be because his Facebook account, like many people in law enforcement, like don't have his actual information on it, you know?
Yeah.
So either he's just knows. Some like weirdo or he's
a troll.
Yeah. Or he's like an actual cop who just doesn't put a lot of identifying information on his Facebook account.
Mm-hmm.
Either way. So this person got on there and said, you know, they just really couldn't do anything. He said they, of course, needed a warrant in order for Facebook to release any information about the post, including like the IP address from which it came.
Mm-hmm.
But since Shane was an adult, he was still just considered to be a missing person who potentially didn't want to be found.
Right.
There was no crime associated with this case.
Right.
So no basis for a warrant.
I mean, it's unfortunate, but that's reality.
And that's why I kind of do believe that this guy's who he said he was, because like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Then in 2023, 6 years after Shane's disappearance, something else funky happened with his Facebook page. Mike and others had been sending Shane messages over the years, just, you know, as a way of having a one-sided conversation with him.
Mm-hmm.
But one day, those messages started popping up as red.
Oh.
Mike contacted the police, and it was eventually determined that someone named Tim had gotten Shane's old phone number, the same one that Shane had used to set up his own Facebook account. When Tim tried to log on to his account, he had a code sent to his phone, but instead of logging him into his account, it logged him into Shane's, which was also associated with that phone number. Now, listen, I can see your face. And when I read that, I was like, that's not how that works at all. Like, that's right? Insane.
Yeah, I was thinking that's not accurate.
Right. But I looked it up and apparently this has happened to a lot of people with recycled phone numbers. Like I actually linked an article to it because it just happened to some like random guy. And basically he hadn't logged into his own Facebook account in like a couple of years or whatever. So he couldn't remember his password.
Okay.
So he went, and this is from the article, not this Tim guy. So one of the password recovery options is to have a code sent to your phone. So he put his phone number in, they sent him the code, and it logged him into a complete stranger's account. He said like everything was in Spanish, like he had no idea what was happening.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Huh.
So, okay, so I read that and I was like, okay, so I guess this is kind of legit, but it got weirder because like it seemed like there was more going on there, because Mike was able to get in touch with this Tim guy, which is how we know his name is Tim. And he asked him to go through Shane's messages to see if he found anything. And he was like, hey, you have access to this account.
Right.
Can you like change the password? Give me the password so that I can access it.
Yeah.
Which if this is some random recycled phone number issue, like I read about in that article, it would seem like an amazing stroke of luck, right?
Yeah, right.
That like, holy shit, you can get into his account. Somebody can help you. And, you know, I think anybody who is in that situation on the other end and they hear like this random account you're in is of a missing person that right. we haven't been able to access. This is like 6 years later.
Yeah.
You know, anybody would be like, yeah, let me change the password. I'll give it to you. Anything I can do to help.
You would also think that maybe the police would want to contact him
right.
and do the same thing.
Sure. But that's not what happened. According to Mike, Tim initially agreed to like do that to help him out, but then changed his mind. And at first I saw that. And again, because I'm piecing all this together from the Facebook group.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw that. I was like, okay, well, maybe he like didn't have access to it anymore. Like maybe he like logged in once accidentally
and then got out
and yeah. like couldn't get back in or, you know, whatever it was. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But then other people started reporting that this Tim guy or like whoever it was who had access to Shane's account started replying to their Facebook messages to Shane.
What?
Yeah. Like, and they posted screenshots. And so they'd like send messages to Shane's account being like, hey, like this is, you know, my friend Shane, who's been missing for 6 years. We really want to get into his account or whatever. And they would get a reply back telling them to quit and that he wasn't Shane. He just had his phone number. And people are like, okay, well, we're not texting you. Like,
right.
We're Facebook messaging you and you are on his Facebook account messaging us back. Like, this isn't, we're texting the wrong phone number.
Right. That's so weird.
And I, like I said, I saw screenshots where this dude, whoever is in Shane's account, was like threatening to call the police.
Call the police.
That's what they said. They're like, okay, good. Please do.
Yeah.
We will also call the police.
Right.
And hopefully we can get this figured out. But what's wild is that it doesn't appear that anything ever came of this. Like, it doesn't seem like the police ever got involved one way or another. It doesn't seem like they ever got access to Shane's Facebook page. Eventually, people just stopped posting about this. And I have no idea what happened.
What the hell? I mean, that is so crazy.
This is just a year ago. This is 6 years
yeah.
after Shane disappeared that all this is happening.
That is crazy.
Yeah. And this guy is responding to messages on a Facebook account that is not his.
Right.
Saying, leave me alone. Stop harassing me.
I mean, how about you just turn over that information and then log out of the account?
Yeah. Like,
that isn't yours.
It was the most bizarre thing. As Shane's friends and family marched 7 years without him in 2024, their anger seemed to grow. And this is when they started speaking publicly about Kelly P, the woman who Shane was allegedly with that night.
Okay.
And at one point I did find out like her actual full name, but I'm not going to put it out there because, again, this is just all Facebook stuff.
Right.
Like none of this has been vetted.
Right.
So I'm not going to dox some like random person. As the years passed, Shane's friends and family seemed to be more and more convinced that not only did this person have information about what happened on the night of April 25th, 2017, but that she may have set Shane up. Mike talked about this in his interview with Fox 43, saying, quote, she's in jail now. That girl knows something. I know she does, but you can't force it. She can sit on that story for the rest of her life. I don't know how she can sleep. I know I can't sleep at night, end quote. There are also rumors that Kelly had been talking about what happened to Shane while she was in jail and even bragging about it. But a woman named Jessica, who claimed to have been in jail with Kelly back in 2020, said that Kelly always swore she had nothing to do with Shane's disappearance. Shane's mom, Cindy, didn't come out and accuse Kelly, but does believe that her son is the victim of a crime and that the perpetrator was someone he knew.
I mean, most likely.
Yeah.
If they didn't find anything in the alley or the block and a half between the house and Sheets, you would assume that he got into a car willingly.
Right. Because that's the thing. Like, Shane was, like, you know, a big guy. He knew how to take care of himself. Could he have been, like, grabbed and put into a car? Sure. But, you know, he would have put up a fight.
Uh-huh.
So you're right. I think the more likely scenario is that he did get into a car willingly. And that's basically what Cindy said. She said, quote, he wouldn't get into a vehicle with someone he didn't know. And he was a pretty strong kid. Whoever did whatever to Shane, I don't want to know how he died or if he's dead. But I know some people in this town know something and they ain't talking. End quote. And unfortunately, that's what this case seemingly comes down to. People aren't talking. This case doesn't strike me as particularly mysterious.
No, not at all. It seems pretty straightforward to me that he got into a car.
Yeah.
And
then something bad happened.
Yeah. And his body is out there somewhere.
Right.
And the people involved are not talking.
Exactly. And the people who know things aren't talking. Because I'm sure, because I do, like, this is the type of crime that I feel people who were involved probably did tell other people about.
Oh, for sure.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, my personal belief is that Shane's parents are right. His disappearance is likely drug related. And if that's the case, he probably did owe the wrong people money. I mean, if, you know, somebody's going through all this trouble to harm him, they're not doing it for no reason.
Right.
But regardless of the circumstances around his disappearance and the possible motive behind it, it doesn't make Shane a bad person, and it certainly doesn't make him unworthy of being found.
Exactly.
I went through 7 years of anguished Facebook posts from Shane's father and other people who love him. I can say with absolute certainty that Shane is deeply loved and deeply missed. It's also obvious to me that the combination of Shane's family not having the resources to hire PIs and hold press conferences and do all of those things that you see in a lot of these missing persons cases means that they couldn't force the police to actually take this case seriously. And there's also the stigma surrounding drug users. And, like, I think those two things combined, like the fact that his parents didn't have resources and the stigma around drug users, are the reasons why this case hasn't been solved.
Yeah. And you also have to think he's known to the Lewiston PD.
Yeah, for sure.
Not to ever say that, you know, police officers would be like, oh, well, one less person I have to worry about, that kind of thing. But it kind of feels that way. Like, okay, this guy was a troublemaker. He was involved in drugs. We knew him. He spent time in jail. He's kind of out of our hair.
Yeah.
We're not going to put a whole lot of resources to this.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like.
Right. Even if they do believe that something nefarious happened, I think there's also the possibility that a lot of cops genuinely think he just took off, too.
Yeah, it seems unlikely, but that is also a real possibility.
So somebody did post, like, because that was a big theory, especially early on, that he was just in hiding. And one of his friends was like, no, because he actually had kind of done that before. Apparently,
oh, yeah.
He had, like, taken off. And she was like, yeah, but he came to my house and didn't stay out of touch with certain people. Like,
right.
The people he could trust, he got in touch with.
Yeah.
During that time. So, like, it was a very different situation from whatever happened on April 25th, 2017. Lewistown is a small borough. It's the type of place where people know each other and they know each other's secrets. I fully believe that there are multiple people out there walking among Shane's heartbroken family who have the ability to answer their questions. They just need to be brave enough. As Cindy told Fox 43, quote, you start thinking about it and you cry. You don't want to think about it because it hurts too much. I pray every night for him. And then there's moments where I just break down. End quote. Thank you. Shane Workman has been missing from Lewistown, Pennsylvania since April 25th, 2017. He is a white male with black hair and brown eyes. He was between 5'10 and 6'2 and 170 to 175 pounds at the time of his disappearance. He was last seen wearing a red hoodie, a dark-colored large t-shirt, size 34-32 or 34-30 baggy blue jeans, a black curly cap, solid-colored boxer shorts with an elastic band, size 12 sneakers, black socks, and a silver neck chain with a silver cross pendant. He was 31 when he went missing. He would be 38 today. Anyone with information regarding Shane Workman's disappearance is urged to contact Detective Jeremy Poff with the Lewistown Police Department at 814-445-4104. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and TikTok. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by me, Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.